Why, hello there, Hillary.
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
You know what? I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
I am doing well. Thank you.
Good, good. I like to hear that.
We are recording on another Monday.
Goodness, because I was traveling this time. It was not you two related. It was me related.
Today is Monday, March 25th. If you're listening, it is on or after Wednesday, March 27th. This is season 6, episode 13.
It's just going to be April before we know it.
I know.
That is crazy.
So crazy.
Welcome to Kissing Lips and Breaking Hearts with the Garden Tarts. We have a little app for you today.
Very little app.
Yeah, but I think productive and cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have some information from some fans that sent some stuff in, so we'll talk about that. And at the end, we'll talk about some upcoming stuff. But you said there was some cool this day in U2 history.
Yeah, there are a few
things.
There were a few interesting things. Well, one is March 28th in U2 history. Vertigo tour started in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
2005.
Whew.
Yeah, I remember that only because I could not have told you where the tour started. I had no memory of that or anything, but I remember it was on an episode of Entourage.
Oh, that's cool.
They went to go see U2 in San Diego.
You didn't go to that opener?
I did not.
Me neither.
Yeah. Obviously I went to Pop Mart, but then I didn't go to another opener until Joshua Tree.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. I've never watched Entourage. Do I need to watch it?
Oh, yeah, it's really good.
Okay.
It's a very masculine, misogynistic.
Oh, yeah. I would expect nothing less.
Yeah.
But from the clips that I've seen.
Oh, it's awful. But it's really entertaining. I enjoyed it. I mean, I actually went to the movie theater and saw the movie.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When that came out. Like, I was a pretty dedicated
entourager.
I don't know if I was new to it now, I don't know that I would enjoy it as much. But when I watched it from when it started.
Right.
So you have to have that in mind. But
is that a HBO?
It's HBO.
I mean, just because I started doesn't mean it's a life sentence that I have to keep watching it.
Right.
So I'll add it to my list right now.
But it's just, there's something nice about a group of guy friends.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice about, you know, girlfriends too, but you see that more often than you see.
Yeah, like male friendship is not a common theme.
Right.
For sure.
Okay, a few other newsworthy things also on the 28th. 1987, With or Without You peaks the official UK charts at number 4. And The Name of the Father single was released in 94.
Okay.
So this, I don't know. And if anyone has any information on this, let me know, because I don't recall this at all. And it feels like something that I would remember. But in 2006, which I did not think was a tour year, but it was, apparently, U2 was scheduled to play a few shows in Australia, and they were postponed. They were rescheduled for later in the year.
That might sound vaguely familiar. I would never have pulled that out of my back pocket.
Yeah.
But
It just feels like something that I would know about, that I would have remembered, and I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. Oh, let me go back because it was a big one. In U2 history, March 27th, the band performed on the rooftop of a liquor store in Los Angeles, filming the video for Where the Streets Have No Name.
Oh, that is a big one.
That's a huge one. Also, I don't know who it was, but somebody back when I listened to interviews and bootlegs and stuff on cassette, somebody sent me this cassette of a bunch of, it's from Boston, WBCN, a bunch of radio interviews. And there was one where Bono, Larry, and Edge act as guest DJs on the radio. And I had that. Anyway, that was also on March 27th.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I felt like I had a comment on something and now I can't remember what it was. But maybe I didn't.
Also on March 27th, in 2003, J-Lo records duet with Bono. I never heard of that before. That must not have gone anywhere.
That must have not gone anywhere. I wonder. I'm going to do a quick little Google. Oh, I Googled the Vertigo tour dates. And so early March, March 2nd, 2006, they ended in Argentina. And then it wasn't until November of 2006 that they went down under and Japan. Oh, and then they ended in Honolulu.
That I remember, but I didn't remember that it was in 2006.
Yeah, well, barely.
I mean, I remember because a lot of our West Coast friends went to that.
Right. Oh, this is what I was going to say. Do you remember eating some meal in Detroit? We were up at Ford Field for the JT17. And we were in some restaurant having some meal. And our waiter told us that he was in that Streets video. And he was like the guy on a pole or something in the video. And then we went and we're like, that's not him. But yeah, we looked. It was not that guy's face.
Yeah.
So it's fun of him to try. I'm like, how many U2 fans is he telling?
Right.
This, because we were all like taking a break from like the GA line and stuff. Like that restaurant was, I think we're getting breakfast. It was delicious from what I remember.
It was a really good restaurant. I remember that.
And yeah, he was probably telling that story all day.
Yeah.
Well, those are fun. This day, this week in history.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to look up Bono and J-Lo. Helps if I spell things right. Ooh. Wow, I don't want to click on that. Whatever happened to the duet between Bono and J-Lo? This is a post on Interference. Remember that? U2 Interference?
Yes, I do.
They recorded a beautiful duet called An American Prayer and planned to debut it during a halftime show at the Super Bowl. This is what someone posted on a message board. I'm not stating this as fact. I'm curious. I like J-Lo and would like to see her and Bono sing together. Someone commented, I don't think I want to hear it. People are mean. Don't know and don't care. None of this is helpful. Someone asked a question.
Just scroll down if you don't.
And if you don't have an answer, don't fucking say anything. Let's see what's this. This is a video. Oh, this is just a video of Bono coming out of coming from out of the VMAs. And J-Lo and Puff Daddy happen to be right there also.
Oh.
He gave J-Lo a little smoochy smooch. Oh, here is the actual link on YouTube songs. From 2003, Jennifer Lopez revealed during a recent internet chat on her official website that she has recorded a duet with YouTube frontman Bono. Haven't released it yet. Waiting for the right timing. Yeah, I don't know that. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I learned something new. I don't remember that.
Me neither.
I'm sure at the time we were aware. If the internets were talking about it.
Unless it just never got released.
Or, right, but aware, the internets knew that they had recorded something.
Yeah.
I'm sure we were aware. Or maybe we didn't care.
I think we didn't care.
I think that was in our not caring era.
Yeah.
That was 2003, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay.
There wasn't much going on.
Yeah. We had other things on our minds. Anyway.
Well, we saw in 2003, we saw Bono at church and we went to Dublin.
We did see Bono in church in Kentucky.
Yeah.
We went to Dublin. Yeah.
So there were things going on. We just probably weren't.
Yeah.
Digging J-Lo.
We probably haven't told that church story, have we?
I don't know.
I don't think we have.
We'll have to do that.
We'll have to get Garin Turn Amanda on.
Yeah.
See if she'll do that with us. And y'all have to tell it, because I remember almost nothing.
Yeah.
Except the boombox.
See, I've forgotten about that till you.
Almost sing a song. It's play. I just remember a boombox. Anyway. Let's hear from Alice.
Okay.
Let's get serious. Alice from Virginia went to see Kiss the Future, and which is no longer in theaters. But she sent a really nice voice memo about it, and I am just aching for it to come out streaming somewhere. I feel like it
this year.
It's supposed to later this year.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like it has to. But we appreciated her sending in a little review and info. So let's take a listen.
Hi, Garden Tarts. Hi, Hillary. Hi, Jenny. Hi, Amanda. This is Alice from Virginia calling in to say, first of all, I love your podcast. I found your podcast a few months ago, right after I'd come back from Vegas from the Sphere, and was needing some more you two in my life, and love it. Love your podcast. Calling in to share my experience seeing the documentary Kiss the Future, which I'm betting that a lot of your listeners have heard about. It is a 2024 documentary about the Siege of Sarajevo, about aid worker Bill Carter and his efforts to get in touch with you two, and how that resulted in a concert in Sarajevo after the conflict was over. So wanted to let you know that I loved the movie. It was really well done. They did a nice job of highlighting a handful or a little bit more of aid workers, journalists, and musicians who lived through the conflict. And then they spent the other half of the time sort of interwoven, talking about, you know, you two, their concert in Sarajevo, how it came about. There's some really great concert clips and old interviews with the band and current interviews with the band. So I don't think it's in theaters anymore. I think it was in theaters for about 3 or 4 weeks. And I'm sure it's coming to streaming, but I don't know where yet. I'm sure your listeners can, will hear when it goes to streaming. But highly recommend, 10 out of 10. Great for anybody who's interested in learning more about the conflict on the really human level, how the arts continued to thrive in Sarajevo during the siege, and U2's involvement. And bring your tissues. If it does come back in theaters or you watch it online, bring your tissues, because the final scene, not going to spoil it, but I found it really emotional, and it involved how the music of U2 impacted the people who had lived through the siege and who were highlighted in the movie. So make sure you have your tissues ready. And I hope that that information is helpful to you and your listeners. Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, Alice.
Yeah, thanks. I had heard this from other sources too, to bring tissues for the end. So I'm really just anxious. I want to watch it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we'll see it soon enough. And then we'll give our review of that. And then also, there was so the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas was going on recently. It's over now, I presume. And there was a last minute addition that was a kind of panel discussion about the U2UV production. And listener Tom got into it. So I asked him if he would send in a voice memo as well with some information. And so he did. So we'll take a listen. I did listen carefully, y'all, just because the audio is not perfect, but it's good information and it's worth your 9 minutes to listen to what he has to say. Really, it's not just don't be distracted. It's not impossible or anything. Yeah. But maybe turn the volume up a little bit. So, but it's worth sharing. So, Tom, take it away.
Hello, this is Tom Frederick coming to you from Austin, Texas. I was able to attend a very nice panel today. I talked about Southwest in my hometown. This venue was called Marlow, and it was called the, they're having a Ireland House at South by Southwest, where a bunch of speakers were giving presentations about panel discussions about AI and VR and drones. And one of the panels that was just announced late last Friday was coming up today, Tuesday, about, it's called The Story of U2 UV Octone Baby Live at Sphere. Panelists Rick Lipson, Stu Fish, stage designer and creative consultant, Stefan Smasher Desmet, live video director, and Niall Slevin, audio monitor and wireless systems engineer, were the three panelists. They had a moderator as well that gave introductions to everyone and kind of moderated the interviews. And I really wanted to see this after having witnessed, fortunately witnessed four Sphere shows, the first two shows in September, and then near the last two shows, February 17th and 18th. Really been on a buzz about the shows lately, and the fact that this was happening in my hometown, I had to make it down there. So got in, which you normally have to have credentials to get in these kind of things, but I just was honest up front and said, I am a local Austinite diehard U2 fan. Can I please get in? They let me in. So honesty is the best policy, and they let me in. So it was very nice. It was an hour-long presentation with some video clips, mostly the clips we've seen on YouTube. .com or Devo, some of the live clips, like even better than the real thing, with the drones flying around the venue, and people were just really impressed about it. People that saw it, yes, raise your hands. How many people here saw U2 Sphere? And there's probably about 10 people raise their hands. Got to see the shows, and like I say, it was a very nice presentation by people that helped put on the U2 show. But one thing that really struck me is how much of a time crunch they were under. It reminded me of the Beatles Get Back documentary on Disney Plus about how much of a deadline they were under and how it was looming, how they barely got finished in time. And this kind of reminds me of that they started chilling all these different slides of sketches and blueprints for the show, and went back to August, September of 2022, or January 2022, I'm sorry, wait, almost 2 years in the making of the show. And they first met in France at the place not far from Nice, where Bono has a place, and they had wine, and had told a funny story about having glasses of wine. There was a picture of Bono, there was a picture with Paul McGinnis, I believe, sitting next to him, and they kind of brainstormed this show before they even knew it was going to be Octone Baby or what, but they were just coming up with ideas. And it was just fascinating to hear how, you know, they were basically, normally they have a stage to work with, and in this case here, it was all designed for a venue that wasn't even built yet. They had an idea of what it would look like, but they didn't actually see the finished product until 3 weeks prior to the show starting. And it was pretty amazing. Now, they had different stages in different areas, and they rehearsed in one stage, and they would just get everything down without knowing what the visuals were going to look like. And the finished product, they had sketches of it, but didn't know. Nothing came together until the very end. And they explained how, you know, everyone thinks there's just one sphere, when actually there's three spheres. There's was the big one in Vegas. That's the 100%. And there's a 25% scale and a 10% scale. Those were used to kind of help demonstrate the potential of the venue to investors and so forth, and give you an idea how it's going to work. But it was just amazing to see all these pictures and hear the stories about how long it was taking to get everything finished and how they just barely got it done in time, and different ideas they had and for how the stage could work. And at one point, they showed how the stage could actually be part of the screen itself, kind of go inside the screen. They decided not to pursue that option, and about how the turntable stage itself was a design idea based on the Brian Eno's turntable that Bono has one in his kitchen, pretty cool, and that and a special hire a special LED person to make the stage like that. And it was just a fascinating panel. Like I said, it was good to hear from the inside point of view about how much work, how much blood, sweat, and tears went into putting this together. And Masha was saying how he it was the opening night of the show, September 29th, which I had to attend as well, also because that was my birthday. And, you know, Bram's birthday, as we found out that night. But that show was just such an emotional release for him and for people working on the show. They worked so long on it, and to see everything come to fruition was just like he just wept, he said, just seeing it all. And it was just such a mind-blowing thing. And like I told them afterwards, it was wonderful because being an opening night, there was no spoilers, no idea what was expected, no idea what was coming. And we got to see this show without, they didn't even realize it, but it was like a Zoo TV type set list. So it was really just mind-blowing. And he had some great stories. He had worked with them since the original Zoo TV tour, and did Pop Mart, worked on the screen for Pop Mart, and then talked about 360. And he was going to retire 5 years ago. He kept getting pulled back in, kind of Godfather style. And so he's been with the band a long time. And then they talk about the sound, how all the different sounds, how you can't see the speakers in the venue itself, and how they're kind of behind the wall, and it kind of trains your ears to kind of enjoy the show differently, because normally you kind of aim your listening at the speakers, and this way it was kind of everywhere, and how they can like move the different sounds from like Edge's guitar, like Love Is Blindness solo, into the center of the speakers, and then it kind of move and fade it to the left, and just really amazing thing. They talk about what a groundbreaking structure this new venue is, and how it's going to, you know, revolutionize, and it can change the whole concert experience. And it was like I said, it was just really well nice to get people that worked on this show, and just kind of I wanted to go talk to them afterwards and just thank them personally, and I got to shake their hands and thank them personally for all the hard work they did on this show. And even the one guy that worked on it says I told him I got to see 4 shows. I was very lucky. And he said, no, I never got to see a show. I worked every night. I was behind the stage, and I was behind there, and I was working on computer system, and never got to see just bits and pieces. I'm like, oh, that's the irony of it all. He was at all 40 shows, but he was just working them. Didn't get to actually experience them. Another man that worked on it, now 7, I believe, he was saying about how, Rick Lipson was saying how he did all this work on it, and then he didn't get to see opening night or any of the shows because he was going on to the next project. So it's like, man, it's almost like the roadies that they just, you know, it seems like a great job, but really they don't do anything but just build up and tear down, which was another thing they revealed too about how they had to tear down the stage every day in order to, because they would have screenings of the movie, that Postcards from the Earth, Darren Aronofsky's movie. Every day that they didn't have a concert, they would have it showing that movie, so they'd have to tear down the stage at the end of each concert and put it away in special different places to put it away so they could show the movie. And while they were building the venue, they were kind of like switching back and forth between to get the screens ready for the movie and to get it ready for the concert experience. But a lot of neat little tidbits I learned at attending this, so I was very grateful to have been able to see this, just about, you know, to go downtown in my hometown. There it is. There's a little sphere demonstration. There were no posters or anything like that given out or anything, but just a lot of cool, nice people and hanging out, and a lot of Irish people. And you know, it was well done. It was well done. I could have heard more stories for sure. And it was neat seeing all these drawings and schemas on the screens that were like what it looked like as it went along, and some of the artwork that was shown during it, but the flags, like that were like, you know, they were showing there was a black flag too. I didn't realize there was a white flag we saw during streets, and the smoke flags, and then there's one, you know, during, I think, until the end of the world, but then there's a black one that they didn't use, and I like what he told the sound man said about the now about how the during Streets, how the sound kind of started behind your head, and the organ kind of started behind your head, and by the time the sound reached to the front of the stage, that's when Edge guitar kicked in, and it's like, wow, give me goosebumps just hearing that, thinking about that. It's like, it's such a brilliant design show, and just groundbreaking. I mean, you include our favorite band playing one of our favorite albums and innovative albums, and that alone is enough reason to celebrate. But then you throw in this unbelievable presentation and production, and it's just jaw-dropping, just mind-blowing. It just stays with you because it's so memorable. And anyhow, that's just what I want to say. It was a really great experience today. Glad I got to attend that. Thanks for listening, and take care. Good.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, that would have been so cool. I want to meet Smasher.
Yeah.
That's a name from the past. When he mentioned that they didn't use the black flag, I was like, I would have lost a lot of money betting that they had used it.
Yeah.
I went look through all my pictures. The black flag wasn't used.
Yeah.
I think that was the original piece of art. Another fun fact is a lot of people do think that the white flag was smoke, but it wasn't. It's actually water condensation. And I learned that in the tour program book. So it's a commentary on environment and drought.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So that's just a little fun fact there.
One thing that I didn't really think about, I did actually, but I thought about it as an advantage. The fact that they were playing the same show in the same venue over and over, in my head, it was like a plus because they didn't have to like break down the stage. But they did.
They did. Yeah. They had
to break down the stage every single night because of the movie.
Yeah. So, man, that crew, like when the band was off all week, maybe coming in Wednesday,
yeah,
crew was like working.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, they
well, no, because they would have to take it down.
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't have anything, but they had to be like ready.
Yeah. To put it
they
back
couldn't just
up.
Show up to the show.
No.
They had to get it ready again.
I just, you know, I thought that was an advantage of being in the same venue over and over, you know.
Yeah, I had the same thought about that, like, oh, because I remember seeing pictures from inside the venue of it being the movie.
Yeah.
And I actually wondered if like the stage got like something was moved.
Yeah.
I didn't like the stage was pushed back. Was the screen pulled forward? Like, I don't know. I don't understand anything about how that venue works, but I never in my mind did I think that they were deconstructing it.
Yeah.
Every time. That's crazy. You know what else? We talked last time about the band's interview they did in Zoo Station. And this just reminded me of something we didn't comment on about how even for the band, it was a different show every night. They were playing, I mean, not the band, but like the sound and Joe and Willie and everything, they were playing with the where the sound was coming from and, you know, where the guitar hit. And there were good nights and there were bad nights. And I was like, how is this not like
the same thing every night?
The same thing every, like, it just, and I guess it depends on the crowd. Well, oh, and Bono said something about how disorienting the stage was. And I actually had the thought about how easy that stage must be on. There's such little ground to cover.
Yeah.
Like what a nice little intimate space for them to be in. But for him to be like, I didn't always know where I was. I had to figure it out. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting. I got to go back and listen to that again. Because I know I missed stuff. Some other things coming up that I'm going to announce this stuff is like penciled in. Because we have verbal chats with these people, but we don't have any dates in the book yet.
Yeah.
But our AJ Sams at U2 Songs has his new book out. Well, it's not out in America yet. It comes out, I think, and my Amazon delivery date says April 1st. But he wants to come talk on the pod, talk about his book and the process. So that'll be super fun. So we'll have him on soon enough. And we've been talking to Tatiana, who's the author of U2 Irish in Every Other Way. You may have seen her post stuff about being backstage with Edge at Sphere and stuff. But her book, From Oscar Wilde to the Zoo TV, From WB Yeats to Bloody Sunday, we just got it.
Yeah.
And she, hopefully we can arrange, she said that she'd love to chat with us as well. So hopefully we can arrange that sooner than later after we read the book and have some questions for her. So that's some exciting stuff coming up soon enough.
Yes.
And then speaking of U2 songs, they have a section called The Crystal Ball that is kind of like, what's coming up next? Rumors, these kinds of things. And they just put out a new article on that. So it just kind of updates from the other rumors about album, tour, recording. Not really adding a lot of meat to the bones, but it's just fun. The wheels are turning in the U2 world, it seems.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully we'll get some solid information soon. That would be fun. Nice.
Yep.
Let's just keep this train rolling, man. Why stop? Let's go. But I think that's it for now.
That's all I have.
Yeah. So thank you, Alice and Tom, for sending stuff in. And y'all can always send stuff in. We're happy to hear comments about experiences you've had, books you've read, saying nice things about us. Remember, one of the number one rules of this podcast is that you can't make Hillary cry.
No, please don't make me cry.
We haven't talked about that in a while.
No. I don't like crying.
No.
And I cry easily.
Yeah. So if you have anything nice to say, we will call you out. Don't think things will go
anonymous. No, we won't call you out. We just won't play it.
Well, we probably won't play it, but we might say we got something from so-and-so and it was mean.
Yeah.
But we're not going to tell you what it was. If you are listening on a mobile device at this moment, like not in your currently driving, please go, if you're on Spotify, please go to the homepage of our podcast and give it 5 stars. If you're in Apple Podcasts, just scroll to the bottom, write a review, give us 5 stars. Please.
Please.
With a cherry on top. And a Guinness chaser, please. Whiskey chaser, I don't know. Please, please, please. Okay. Well, that was good.
Yeah.
I think we could say goodnight to these fools.
I would like to. I've got some stuff to do before I go to bed.
I don't really think y'all are fools. That's just something I say. Like, when I'm at the gym and I'm waiting for people to come in for a class I'm teaching, and I'll be like, come on, who are these fools? I do want them to show up, and I do want you all to listen.
Yeah. And we think you're smart.
Yeah. That's just something I say. That's not an insult. Anyway, on that note, I think we should say goodnight.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
We'll be back next week with more U2ish content.
In the meantime, keep chatting with us on social media at the_gardentarts.
Sign up for our newsletter at thegardentarts.com. And share with your YouTube friends.
You can support us on Patreon, buy me a coffee, and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Kissing Lips and Breaking Hearts, a U2's podcast with the Garden Tarts, is created, produced, and edited by us, the Garden Tarts.
Intro and outro music by December.
See you next week.